This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Coy Barefoot with you. I am proud to welcome into the studio Christopher Gates. He's the executive director of PACE. That's Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, and he's the former president of the National Civic League. Welcome to Charlottesville.
Thank you very much.
I know you're in just for a few days to speak at the University of Virginia at the Sorensen Institute's Political Leaders Program class of 2006 graduation at the Rotunda.
Right.
And want to welcome you. Now, you're coming from Colorado, right?
Yep. Came in from Colorado yesterday.
And you are a native. We were talking about how you're a native of Colorado. I don't think I've ever met a native of Colorado.
There are not many of us.
I understand that California is moving into Colorado.
Yeah. In the 1970s in Colorado, apparently there were bumper stickers all over the place that said, "Don't Californicate Colorado." So there's a lot of animosity but toward those California people.
Chris, the place I usually like to start is just to give folks a 101, introduce them to the voice that they're hearing over their radio. Give us a little Chris Gates 101, where you're from and how you got to the point where you are with the Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement and what that is, and we'll talk about that.
Well, I basically spent a career in the field of public service, democratic renewal, and civic engagement. Over the years, I've worked on political campaigns. I've been a speechwriter to a few different governors, worked in the field of philanthropy for a while, and then 20 years ago started working for the nation's oldest good government organization called the National Civic League, which was founded by Teddy Roosevelt and Louis Brandeis in 1894. And I ended up being president of that organization for the last 11 years. And it's really sort of the nation's oldest think tank on the issues of community and democracy. And that's really what I've dedicated my career to working on, and do a lot of leadership training, a lot of speaking around the country. And PACE is a new organization, new philanthropic organization that was created by a coalition of 25 different foundations. And so it's a brand new effort, and I'm the first executive director of PACE.
That's really exciting. So Teddy Roosevelt formed the National Civic League in the late 19th century. What was the motivation?
Believe it or not, it almost sounds ridiculous to say, but the three founders of the organization at the meeting January 25th, 1894 in Philadelphia were a young Teddy Roosevelt, a young Louis Brandeis, and a young Marshall Fields, all who went on to achieve, obviously, great things in their lives. And it was really the gathering of civic reformers at that time was in response to the incredible corruption, the disengagement of citizens from politics in the late 1800s in this country. People forget that in the late 1800s in America, the form of government that we had, if you read the periodicals of the day, was referred to as a democratic experiment. It was something that we were trying to see if it would work. And in the late 1800s, it didn't work very well at all. And I think it's particularly remarkable and unique for this nation that at a moment when it would not have been that incredible if this country would have turned away from democracy and sort of said this notion of anybody can vote and anybody can run and we can pick our own leaders and say that model doesn't work here, that it took the crisis of the late 1800s to lead to the burst of civic reinvention that happened in the 1910s and 1920s in this country, where we changed the way government did business, changed the way we ran campaigns, and created the nonprofit sector. And Roosevelt and Brandeis and Field, later Charles Evans Hughes, were at the forefront of those movements.
What was the crisis of the late 1800s that caused this? I'm sure income disparity must have had something to do with it. We're talking about this this age when all of a sudden the mega millionaire was born.
Well, and everybody had moved from the farm to the city, and we had the Industrial Revolution, and our cities were absolute chaos. Remember, this is the era when Upton Sinclair and Jacob Riis and Sinclair Lewis were writing about the shame of the cities and the jungle and sort of the incredible things that were happening in American cities. And it truly was a time when elections were bought and sold. It was a time when elected officials, in essence, had street gangs enforcing their territory. One of the blessings of a historian in the field of democracy is when somebody popularizes the story. And when Martin Scorsese chose to make a movie called The Gangs of New York, and everybody saw that movie, and where politicians would have street gangs that would do their bidding, and it showed a world that a lot of people said, well, that couldn't have been America. And in fact, it was America in the late 1800s. And it was in response to the machine politics and the boss politics that really sort of described the American political system at the time that Roosevelt and Brandeis and Field created the National Civic League.
Our guest is Christopher Gates. He's the executive director of PACE, Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, and he's the former president of the National Civic League, which was founded in part by former President Theodore Roosevelt, the turn of the 20th century. So at that time, there was a real, if I hear you right, there was a real institutional conscious decision on the part of Americans to embrace democracy in a whole new way.
It's a really helpful lesson. I think that America is a very proud country. We're the we're I think the most self-congratulatory nation on earth, and for some good reasons, and probably some for not. And I do believe that we have the greatest democracy on earth, but I don't believe it's because we've always gotten it right. In fact, there are whole swaths of the history of this country that you sort of have to look at through slotted fingers, because you can't believe that happened here. The movement just to get women the right to vote was a brutal nation-dividing fight that took decades. The movement, civil rights movement, same thing. What makes our democracy so remarkable isn't that we've always gotten it right. It's that we've been willing to adapt and change as we moved along, and that, you know, the last big reinvention of democratic practice and institutions was what happened at the turn of the last century. And a lot of us think that the country is due for another one of those bursts of civic reinvention.
Do you see these similarities in? Because I've read about them. And would you agree that we are facing now here in the early 21st century some of those common factors, a constellation of factors that they shared, that Americans shared in the late 19th century that led to this struggle with democracy?
Absolutely. And Arthur Schlesinger Jr. wrote a book called The Cycles of American History, and basically said that you can almost predict the future by looking at the past. And a lot of people, Bob Putnam at Harvard, amongst others, have written about the similarities between the crisis in governance and politics and faith in leaders and institutions that existed in the late 1800s is very reminiscent of the world that we live in today.
So what happened then that we can learn from now? Any one big thing, or was it a series of things that people did, both you know, at a perhaps a community level or a national level that made the difference?
Well, you hate to buy in too much to the great man theory of history and the notion that history is changed by big people who think big thoughts, because I think that can be overstated at some level. But at that time, there were people, big, larger-than-life characters like a Teddy Roosevelt, like a Louis Brandeis, who went on to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who, it was a different era. People didn't poll every question. They didn't focus group every question. And politics at the turn of the previous century was about people with big ideas who would either write or speak and communicate those ideas, and then the people, the voters, would decide which big idea they were more interested in. And so there was more openness to large proposed changes, fresh ideas and concepts. You know, when people always presume that corporate contributions to federal campaigns must have been banned in the 70s during the Watergate era. No, they were banned in 1903 by Teddy Roosevelt. It was an amazing time. And I think that our politics are so fundamentally different today, because it is not much anymore about people simply standing up and saying what their ideas are. It's about people focus group testing and poll testing different ideas.
The marketing and selling and buying of ideas.
Yeah, until they get to the point where they think that they are going to promote a bundle of issues and positions that will get them to 50% plus one. It's a different kind of politics.
Our guest is Christopher Gates. He's the former president of the National Civic League, and he's now the first executive director of PACE, Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement. Let's talk about PACE and what you're doing now in this new role. What is PACE? What's the mission? What's the setup?
PACE is basically an affinity group of the Council on Foundations. The Council on Foundations is the national organization that all foundations belong to. And PACE, for the first time, is an effort to create a subset of foundations that think that part of their job and part of their role is to promote civic engagement and the renewal of America's democratic practice. These are the foundations that worry about the health of America's democracy, and they've decided to create this organization to promote more funding in this field to nonprofits who are doing work in this field. We believe that at some level, philanthropy needs to remember that philanthropy has to be venture capital for progressive social entrepreneurs. It's got to be the place where new ideas are tried out, and that as much as the funding community has become I think more and more risk averse over the years, that it's really important for philanthropy to play a role in worrying about the health of America's democracy, along with the tax benefits, the tax-free benefits that come with the philanthropic sector. There's, I think, a responsibility to worry about the greater good. And so these are mostly big national foundations: Kellogg, Rockefeller Brothers, Cerdna, Atlantic Philanthropies, who have come together to promote the cause of democratic renewal and civic engagement within the field of philanthropy.
Have you seen a trend in your career of perhaps these type of organizations putting more money into this? Or, like, say, they less into a new park, for example, and more into an organization that's perhaps trying to reach into the schools and teach civics?
Well, a couple of issues at play there. One is that philanthropy, just because it's a reflection of the staff that work in foundations and their boards, naturally sort of move from issue to issue to issue. And that during the fight for the McCain-Feingold federal campaign finance reform legislation, philanthropy was very involved in the issues of political reform. But when McCain-Feingold passed, there were a large number of funders that sort of moved on to different topics after that. And for those of us who are doing work in this field, we would argue that McCain-Feingold was a positive step forward in the world of political reform, but certainly not the grand perfect solution to every problem. The other dilemma is that foundations are under more and more public scrutiny and under more and more public pressure to be able to document their successes and explain what change was achieved because of the grant that they gave. And the truth is that community work or democratic renewal work doesn't lend itself very well to that world. And
what kind of metrics do you use to show that you know, a $100,000 grant made more people interested in the issues in their community?
Gave people more faith in each other, right? Exactly.
Right, right.
And you know, it's funny because we use the analogy of venture capital, because in the private sector world, if you're a venture capitalist, if you make 10 investments in 10 companies and one of them is a raging success and the other is a moderate success, you are a very good venture capitalist. In the foundation world, if you make 10 grants and one of them is a raging success and the other is a moderate success, you're probably polishing your resume because that's not
the bar is a little higher then.
Well, it's a different bar, yeah. And you know, we remind people all the time, funders in particular, that there are only two things that can happen when you fund an interesting new idea. One is that it succeeds out of the box, and the other is that you learn something, and both those are good things.
Christopher Gates is the first executive director of PACE, Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, and he's the former president of the National Civic League. He's in Charlottesville briefly to speak at the University of Virginia. Where would you like to see, you know, imagine 10, 20 years down the road, where would you like to see PACE be? Is there a grand goal that perhaps you have in the back of your mind that, boy, it would be fantastic if this organization could do X?
Well, I think it's important for us to remember this adaptive history of America's democracy, and would love to see a world in which nonprofits with interesting new ideas got the resources they need, and that philanthropy understood the role that it could play in the renewal of America's democracy. I think that, you know, 20 years ago, David Osborne wrote a book called The Laboratories of Democracy, and he talked about states being the laboratories of democracy where new ideas are tried. I think the truth is that the modern laboratories of democracy are America's communities, America's cities and counties, where people are experimenting with different models of citizen engagement. Local governments are trying to find different ways other than, you know, public hearings to hear from citizens. They're modeling different ways to finance campaigns and run elections and register voters. And that the other change that I think would be great to see on the part of philanthropy is that philanthropy funds big ideas at the national level. And it's up to community foundations in some cases to do the local funding. And I think there's got to be a way to bring some of the national resources that we have available to us to people who are experimenting and trying new and different things at the local level.
Chris, what is it you think that most people perhaps listening now don't get or don't understand about philanthropy, about civic engagement, about democracy in America?
Well, I think that, that most people think that philanthropy is for somebody else. And the truth is that philanthropy is something that should be part of everybody's life, and whether they are involved with their community foundation, whether they create a donor advised fund, whether they give to United Way, that everybody can give a little bit of their time and a little bit of their money to make things better. And philanthropy extends to, you know, I mean, if you're putting money into the kettle for Salvation Army, you're contributing some of your resources to a greater good, to an organization that's going to help make things better. And so the first part is I think that people need to understand is that philanthropy isn't for somebody else. It's for all of us.
You don't have to wait to win the lottery to participate.
Yeah, exactly right. And then the piece about democracy that I think is most important for people to remember is that if you don't like the system is absolutely adaptable. The system is something that you can change. The truth is that everything that frustrates us about politics today, the hurdles, the barriers, the things that get in our way of participation, were put in place by civic reformers 100 years ago. The reason they were put in place by civic reformers 100 years ago is that elected officials were losing credibility in the eyes of the public because elections weren't deemed to be fair. And so they made voting harder. And by making voting harder, they in essence saved America's democracy because the results of elections had more credibility. Well, the problem 100 years ago was corruption. And so they put those hurdles in the way of voters to make elections have more legitimacy. The problem 100 years later is probably not corruption. I mean, there may be a little corruption left in America, but it doesn't, I think, even come close to resembling what it was like under the Boss Tweed era 100 plus years ago. And the problem today is efficacy. The problem today is that voters have sort of given into victim culture. They believe that somebody else's voice is heard but not theirs, that somebody else is influencing the decision but not them, and that what we've got to do is find ways to tear down some of these barriers to participation, to make it easier for people to be involved, and to create an ethic where it's expected. I mean, in the United States, when it comes to public life or democratic life in America, I think oftentimes, and especially young people, end up confusing cynicism with sophistication, that we think the more cynical we are, the more that makes us sophisticated players. We say, oh, he doesn't believe that, or they're just saying that, or that could never happen. And when you think that way, you've given into something that is, I think, fundamentally not very American and doesn't understand our history as a people, that we're, in fact, the country that believes that anything is possible, that if you want to change something, that you can. And that extends to our democracy. If there is something about this system that we don't like, we collectively absolutely can change it.
Christopher Gates is the first executive director of PACE, Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, on the web at pacefunders.org, and he's the former president of the National Civic League. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.